We present The Motion Show, Radio 4's answer to serious debating, with your chairman, Dr. Phil Hammond.
Hello and welcome to the show that either insults or delights your intelligence, depending on just how intelligent you are to start with. So let's meet our mensural competitors. Got to be careful how you say that. On my left, the sharp cerebral talents of Simon Fancher and Michael White.
Hello.
And rightly opposing them with a roughly equivalent neuron count, it's Steve Punt and Pete Sinclair.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, the speakers. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be deciding which of our two teams can use their synapses in the most persuasive way. So let's get on with it. Here's the first motion. This house would like to go to a millennium party. Mr. Steve Punt, could you please take the lectern and propose the motion? This house would like to go to a millennium party.
Thank you very much indeed. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, in the words of the artist then known as Prince, tonight I'm going to party like it's 1999. And that was in 1984. That's how much Prince can't wait for the millennium. And if Prince says party, who are we to say him nay? Now, surveys show that many people don't fully understand what the millennium really is. They think, in the words of Mr. Damon Albarn, that it's the end of the century. But it isn't. It's the end of 1,000 years. The end of the teens of the AD era. It's the birthday of the 21st century. And what do you do on a 21st birthday? You have a party, like Prince says. New Year's Eve 1999 is surely a time to spend with one's fellow human beings. In the words of Mr. Russ Abbott, what an atmosphere. And let's not forget, this isn't going to be your average New Year's Eve party chit-chat, you know. So have you moved then? Don't you think a 4x4 in town is a bit pretentious? And who brought this Bulgarian wine? It's horrible. No, for one night only, the last 1,000 years is your conversational oyster. You know, don't you think the rise of mercantile capitalism, its reaction in socialism and communism's collapse form an astonishingly neat curve over the period? Isn't the transference of power from kings to parliaments the dominant political motif of 10 centuries? And who brought this Bulgarian wine? It's horrible. You can have millennium theme parties. Fancy dress. Hello, who are you? Oh, I've come as Black Death. Lovely, we haven't got anyone from the 14th century. Have you seen Sue? She's over there, topless with the French flag. Yes, we thought she'd come as Liberty leading the people too. Actually, she's just drunk. And there's Nigel, he's come as Hitler. You'd never think he was an actuary, would you? Well, I've got to go, apparently he's just annexed the kitchen. I myself am planning to go as Karl Marx, just to cheer everyone up. Especially the hostess. Did you make these vol-au-vent yourself? The surplus labour involved in their production is merely added to your oppression. But they're very tasty. And which class traitor brought this Bulgarian wine? But most of all, ladies and gentlemen, the main reason why we should attend millennium parties is, what is the alternative? The alternative is to stay in and watch the television. And which is really worse? A couple of hours spent being sociable once every 10 centuries, or an evening of big break millennium special? The lottery millennium rollover. And 1,000 years of the two Ronnies. I urge you not to be a party pooper, ladies and gentlemen. I urge you, please, support this motion.
Thank you very much. Steve Punt. Mr. Fancher, I can see you frothing at the mouth there. Would you please step forward and oppose the motion? This house would like to go to a millennium party.
This house wouldn't dream of going to a millennium party, and that is exactly what has been described by my honoured colleague over there. Can you imagine if that is as bad as New Year's Eve's parties are? What in God's name is a millennium party going to be like? I mean, New Year's Eve is entirely the invention of office workers who are too dull, too boring, and too preoccupied with the docket number on the Staples invoice to have fun for the rest of the year. If you're freelance, like I am, you can have that much fun, get that drunk, that stoned, and end up that naked in the town square fountain dressed in just a fireman's helmet and a traffic cone on a wet Wednesday in February. But office workers off the leash attach the idea of having fun like they're trying for the Duke of Edinburgh Award. You get surrounded by people determined to drink as much as Gazza, snort as much as Paul Merson, and have as much sex as Bill Clinton. New Year's Eves are a nightmare. It is the fun fascist Nuremberg. They forcibly stuff you with enjoyment, like being fattened for a goose on foie gras, an evening out at a friend's house with Alan from Account. You spend the last hour up to midnight dreading being kissed by people you don't know, singing Auld Lang Syne, a lyric with no discernible ending whatsoever. Singing Auld Lang Syne is like being constantly in Groundhog Day. Every time you wake up, the same lyric is coming round again. And worst of all, you have to have the annual snog with your best friend's granny, who's got a hair growing from the mole on her cheek that's so long, if you strapped her to a boat in the North Sea, she could pick up the shipping forecast. And add to that, millennium resolutions. I mean, I can't give up smoking, drinking, and take up exercise for more than a week, let alone the next 1,000 years. So oppose the motion, stay at home, and have dinner with your friends, ladies and gentlemen. I beg you to oppose the motion.
Thank you. Simon Fanshawe. Spoken with true venom there, Simon. Now, we've heard our main arguments. Before I ask the House to vote, I'm going to throw it open to a little gentle cross-probing. Peter, you're with Mr. Punt in proposing the Millennium Party. Do you not hate being told when to be happy? You have to be happy at this particular night of the year.
Certainly not. I would certainly like to go to a party to celebrate the millennium. If not this one, then definitely the next one. My colleague mentioned Prince's admirable song, Tonight We're Going to Party Like It's 1999. I would just observe that tomorrow it will be $1.99 in a bargain bin, because that's all we'll need to hear from the song.
A point of order.
Yes, point of order, Mr. Fanshawe.
Extraordinary, the idea of basing an entire night's entertainment on behaving like somebody who seems to regard anorexia as a good way to look, have a terrible haircut and write the word slave across his face in biro. That's the kind of things that five-year-olds used to do at school when we were bored with maths. I don't think he's a good role model in this context at all, Steve.
Do you wish to come back on this?
Are we to understand that at Mr. Fanshawe's primary school, people wrote slave across their cheek in biro?
Yes.
I would submit that this is responsible.
I went to public school.
Well, thank you.
And would the fact that you went to public school be responsible for the misanthropy which your speech proposed?
It's not misanthropy at all. It's class hatred. I can't bear common people. All those awful nylon swirly carpet types who go to New Year's Eve parties. They can't have fun the rest of the time of the year. That's why it becomes the fun fascist Nuremberg. Well, that's the problem. Well,
surely the solution then is to get invited to a posh millennium party. Do you go to no parties at all?
I go to parties that I give and friends of mine give. The idea of a millennium party, this great big, let's have a Duke of Edinburgh Award Cub Scout, let's sit round the toadstool with our Kalar national celebration, sounds to me like a complete nightmare.
Mr. White, you have to support your colleague here.
Yes,
What's wrong with the optimism and the enthusiasm of the Millennium Party? You're a burnt-out cynic.
Absolutely everything. What enthusiasm could you possibly have for this? I'm about as keen to go to a Millennium Party as I will be to go to a funeral wake. We belong to the 20th century, and when the 20th century, on the stroke of that midnight, ends, we become yesterday's men. We become sad, pathetic creatures. When the millennium comes, I'm going to stay in bed.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. To name but one example, Einstein was born in the 19th century, died in the 20th. Is he forgotten?
No.
I think not. Not funny, but a fair point.
Yes, it was an excellent point. I uphold that point.
No, you're quite right, Michael. I hadn't thought of it that way. The millennium is going to be the triumph of the teenager. It will be the acne century. That's what will happen.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that. Earlier we asked our audience here for some comments on this motion. Let's see what they said. Here's one from David Bentley, mathematician. Each year is as valid and statistically likely to occur as the next, so singling out any one for special praise because it's got a few O's in it is stupid. Well, we've heard some very cogent arguments from both sides. Members of the House, it's now time to make your choice. All those who want to go with Steve to a millennium, knees up, say aye.
Aye.
And if you'd like to stay at home with Simon, say nay.
Nay.
The nays have it, a conclusive victory for Simon Fanshawe and Michael White. Time for the next motion. This House believes that beautiful people should inherit the earth. Mr. Michael White, with a sense of irony, please step forward and propose this motion. This House believes...
I think that was an insult.
This House believes beautiful people should inherit the earth. Michael White, please propose the motion.
Thank you. Jesus Christ, our Lord, of course, said that the meek should inherit the earth, but those of you who are up to date with your New Testament scholarship will know that this is, in fact, a regrettable mistranslation of St. Matthew. What Jesus actually said was the sleek should inherit the earth, which makes far more sense. Just think that meekness is no basis for inheritance. It's no basis for good governance. It's no basis for authority. The sleek, however, it's another matter entirely. And the problem is that ugly people just let the side down. They're a blot on the landscape. They're a blot on my landscape in a very big way, because I'm a music critic, and in my business, I spend my life going to concerts. Unfortunately, ugly people go to concerts all the time. They go to concerts in droves. I think they find some kind of consolation in music.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, point of order, Mr.
But if I can just add something to my colleague. I want the audience to understand, and it's been very clear, that it's audiences that go to music shows.
Yes, not who come to debate.
Let's be very clear about this. Yes. Audiences who go to... Yes. Comedy debating shows are, by and large, thought to be some of the more beautiful people in the world.
These are shameless calling. I would ask you not to consider this in your vote.
I'm very keen for you to understand that it's not you we're talking about. There is one in the front row, but apart from him, very keen.
There I am, sitting in the audience for these concerts, listening to soul-inspiring performances given by soul-inspiring artists, and... somebody comes and sits next to me with a face like an elephant's bottom, and it just ruins the effect. This has to stop, and I have found a way to stop it. I think that all concert halls and places of entertainment in this country, where they don't dim the lights during the performance, should screen their audiences. It's very simple. You just have somebody standing on the door, and they say, yes, you can come in, yes, yes, you can come in. No, sorry, madam, touch of the elephant's bottom about your face. Go home and listen to a CD. Very simple. You speed up.
A relevant point of order, please, Mr. McGrath.
Yes, my point of order was this proposal to screen the audience would mean that Andrew Lloyd Webber would never see his own concerts again.
Carry on, Mr.
I would just like to add one thing, and that's that you could speed up this process of screening the audience by giving your potential audience members a certificate of aesthetic appeal. It will be like a sort of bus pass. And in fact, it could replace the bus pass. There are far too many ugly folk on public transport these days. Let them walk, I say, and so I'm sure do you. So propose this motion, support it.
Thank you very much. Michael White. And beautifully done, Mr. White, if I might say so. A most persuasive argument, but what have the opposition got to say? Mr. Steve Punt, would you please now oppose the motion? This House believes that beautiful people should inherit the earth.
Mr. Chairman... ladies and gentlemen, beautiful people not only should not, they must not inherit the earth. Why? Because they wouldn't want to. Inheriting the earth carries with it a lot of responsibilities. The rainforests are being destroyed by greed, global warming threatens, political instability and nuclear weapons are an unresolved issue. Do you honestly believe that beautiful people would want to sort that lot out? The only interest they have in rainforests is if there's anything growing in them they can turn into shampoo. They like global warming because they think it'll give them a better tan. Beautiful people don't even pretend to care anymore. Even Narcissus himself, gazing into the mythical pool, would have thought twice before turning to camera and saying, because it's L'Oreal and I'm worth it. Ladies and gentlemen, beautiful people have enough advantages already without inheriting the earth. If any of them do want the earth, they can at least pay for it. Most of them can afford it. Beautiful people have caused trouble, nothing but trouble, throughout history. Helen of Troy, Cleopatra, Christine Keeler, Monica Lewinsky with the light behind her, Cecil Parkinson. But nevertheless, the power of physical attraction has caused untold havoc in the corridors of power, or at least in the trousers that walk around in the corridors of power. Beautiful people get to use a chance fusing of genetic material to give them fame, wealth and notoriety. Let's not give them the earth as well. It's just not fair. Put it this way, ladies and gentlemen. Think about who are some of these beautiful people. Do you honestly think that Tara Palmer Tomkinson should inherit the earth? Do we honestly believe that a woman like this should inherit the earth? Suppose just for one moment that super intelligent aliens from a distant galaxy should visit us. Their majestic mothership descends. Humanity watches in awe. Who is in charge of this planet, say the aliens? Tara Palmer Tomkinson, we say. She inherited it, along with everything else she's got. Can we speak to this person, say the aliens? Sorry, we reply, she's at a charity ball and then she's going skiing. Ladies and gentlemen, I urge you most strongly to oppose this motion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. A keenly contested debate that. Before we throw it open to the House, let's have a bit of gentle cross-probing. Simon, how would you define beauty?
The interesting thing about this debate, Phil, I think, that people crave beauty. They chase beauty. Even people like Steve Punt are desperate to be beautiful people. And much as he does decry the hegemony of beauty. He craves it in his inner soul. I mean, if Steve was somebody who actually bothered occasionally to exfoliate or even deodorise, perhaps, try some fashionable clothes, you'd find that somehow, as they said of Paula Jones, you remember the first woman to go down in history in the Clinton saga. I mean, as they said of Paula Jones, when asked whether they'd managed to improve her looks for the trial, the beauty consultant said, "We have maximised her beauty potential." You see, we crave beauty. That's my point, Phil, is that what beauty is in every magazine. It's on every pin-up. We know what beauty's about, and the truth of it is that we've won the motion because beauty has already inherited the earth. Now, we're not saying that's a good thing. We're merely saying that it will happen, that it is happening, and that it's true, Phil. That's my point. You may be a family practitioner, but we're talking truth here.
Well, Chris Evans, Rupert Murdoch, Robert Maxwell, Andrew Lloyd Webber. Hardly great beauties, can where they sign. No, or perhaps to you they
are. Let's be very clear about this. They own the world. They may not be inheriting it in the future, though. There's a very clear difference here.
Michael, how would you define beauty? You proposed the motion in the first place.
Beauty is somebody who's prepared to wake up with you in the morning and get out first and make the tea.
Well, thank you for that.
Well, it was a poignant little moment, I thought.
It was. It was. Let's move on. Let's see what the audience comments were. Beautiful people may be deluded into thinking they've inherited the earth, but more often than not, they're just used by ugly men. That's from Margaret Cook. No relation to Robin. At least not anymore. And Jason from Norwich said, "I was born with only one ear, although I have a rugged jawline and thick, well-pronounced lips. Will I ever be beautiful?" Simon?
Yes, if he grows his hair down the side where he hasn't got an ear.
Right, time once more for the House to raise its collective voice. All those who, like Michael, want to live in a world ruled by thin symmetry, say aye.
Aye.
And those who like their dictators to be fat and ugly, say nay.
Nay.
A resounding victory for Steve Punt and Pete Sinclair. The next motion is, this House believes that the police should all be like Dixon of Doc Green. Mr. Pete Sinclair, would you please propose the motion? This House believes the police should all be like Dixon of Doc Green.
Evening all. Mr. Chairman, in Dixon of Doc Green's day, if a young man stole an apple, he would simply be given a gentle clip round the ear and told to say sorry to the nice greengrocer. Whereas nowadays, if a young man steals an apple, it's treated as a serious theft of computer equipment. For the truth is that the modern police force has changed. Let's take a straightforward driving offence as an example. In today's world, if a young man gets into his car and tries to show off to his mates by driving at 70 miles an hour through several red lights, he will more than likely be charged with impersonating a police officer. And although the police tell us they've improved since Dixon of Doc Green's day, it's still ironic that a policeman is called a PC when he belongs to the most un-PC organisation you could hope to find. Why is it that most cars stopped by the police just happen to be driven by black people? Mr. Chairman, I think this explains why there aren't any black racing drivers. They'd get halfway around the first lap and the police would stop them for speeding.
Is this your car, sir? Oh, yeah? Then why's it got Mr. Marlborough's name on it?
You don't see many firemen from ethnic minorities either, presumably because the police would pull them over too.
All right, sunshine, where's the fire?
They're opposite. Now, another aspect of modern-day policing which I find hard to understand is the one which sees policemen hanging around in public toilets hoping to entrap gay men. For heaven's sake, if you want to see your MP, make an appointment like the rest of us. And if you want to see George Michael, buy a ticket. No doubt my colleagues opposite will say that I'm being too hard on today's police force. They'll argue that it's just the fault of one bad apple, or in the case of the West Midlands Police Force, one bad orchard with a serious infestation of fruit fly. And to be fair, it is true that the police are overworked nowadays, so much so that in future they're going to save themselves time by allowing suspects to write their own confessions. But to sum up, Mr. Chairman, I firmly believe that all police should be like Dixon of Doc Green, because if that were the case, policemen would be entirely fictional, and in the real world, they wouldn't exist. Mind, there you go.
Thank you very much. Peter Sinclair. A very hard-headed argument there, but what say the opposition? Mr. Michael White, would you please oppose the motion? This House believes that the police should all be like Dixon of Dock Green.
Well, I'm afraid I'm far too young to remember Dixon of Dock Green, but I've been looking at some archive footage for the purposes of this programme, and it seems to me, after my research, that Sergeant Dixon was about as effective a scourge of the criminal classes as a tooth fairy in the age of fluoride. I mean, however he kept up his arrest rate in those days, he certainly wouldn't be able to do it now. I mean, imagine a decrepit housing estate in a run-down South London suburb, broken windows, burnt-out cars, graffiti. In the middle of it all, you've got a band of teenage thugs reordering the facial features of a sweet old lady with her own Zimmer frame. Along comes Sergeant Dixon, big smile, bending slightly at the knees. Now, what's all this then, lads? If you don't take that Zimmer frame out of that sweet old lady's eye, I'll have to have a nice long chat with you over a cup of cocoa. Hopeless. Wouldn't do. Never. What you need these days to deal with modern thuggery, you need somebody mean who'll jump out of nowhere, smash a few heads against a wall, crack their ribs on the way back to the station. There's effective policing. That's the way to get confessions. It's much the same in the more cerebral branches of criminal work. Imagine you're in Dock Green with a van load of documents and files. Hello, Sergeant Dixon. I've got a nice little multi-million pound international fraud here involving several New York banks and money laundering in Nicaragua. Oh, right-ho, says Sergeant Dixon, but I'll have to find my pocket calculator first. It won't work. I bid you oppose this motion.
Thank you very much. Michael White. Now, we've heard the main arguments, but there's time for a little more cross-questioning. Steve, you're in favour of Dixon, Dr. Green. Do you realise he wasn't a real policeman?
I'm sorry, I'm now completely disorientated by this news. I'm going to have to go and lie down for a while now.
Not only was he fiction, he was black and white and two-dimensional.
Point of order.
Yes, point...
Well, many policemen are.
Yes, point of order upheld. Thank you very much. Mr. Fanshawe, you're anti-Dixon.
Well, I mean, I think, as Michael said, you know, the problem is crime prevention here. I mean, that's the point, isn't it? You can't... can you imagine Dixon, you know, in Glastonbury?
But the modern police are no better. I mean, they nowadays they have these roadblocks. If you live in London, they have the roadblocks in the city. And the other day, this actually happened. They stopped
me. Roadblocks, Pete. Those are traffic jams.
Well, they have these points where they stop you as you're going through the city of London. And I was stopped the other day, and they asked me, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to Greenwich. Where have you been? To Watford. All right, then. And I thought, well, what intense questioning. I mean, do they think you're going to trip up and say, I'm on my way to a bank robbery?
Excuse
oh, sorry, bank
minute.
Underground station.
1 minute you're complaining about the viciousness of the modern-day police, and the next minute you're complaining about the politeness and charm of the modern-day police. Next time your house gets burgled, Pete, why don't you call up a social worker or somebody on a bike or something like that to come round? That'd be nice. Somebody come round to be polite to you.
I'll call up Dixon, because he always solved it in the end.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what the audience says. Let's see what our comments were first. Ben from London. Dixon never strayed from his patch. If all coppers were like him, we'd have none in 99.9% of the UK and a police state in Dock Green. Very interesting point. Time for the vote. Members of the House, which team has been most persuasive? If you agree with Peter Sinclair that the police should all be like DODG, say aye.
Aye!
And all of those who think DODG's a dog who's had his day, say nay.
Nay.
A decisive victory there for Steve Punt and Pete Sinclair. And now the show reaches a huge climax where we spring a mystery debate on our speakers. Even I don't know what it's going to be. So it's time once again to say, spin the tombola, please, Lulu. Thank you. Please take one of the envelopes at random and hand it to me. Thank you, darling. Here we go. Here's our mystery motion. This house would like to clone itself. This house would like to clone itself. Please propose the motion, Michael White.
My mother used to say, you could never have too much of a good thing. Money, gin, nights out in Clapham. And it was a bitter disappointment to her that I was the sole fruit of her loins. All her eggs in one basket. Time marches on, it gets too late. But no thanks to the miracle of modern medical science, to which you, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure can testify, we can all double ourselves. And this is not a selfish thing. We could double our contribution to society. We could double the joy we bring to others. We could double the money we get for BBC dates like this. So I say, send in the clones. Support this motion.
Thank you very much. Michael Wayne. Steve Punt, could I please call on you to oppose the motion? This House would like to clone itself.
Well,
I'm opposed to this motion because it hasn't done me any good.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just quieten my claim just for a second. I oppose this motion principally because of the grave danger to law and order that it presents. If I clone myself, I would have an alibi for whatever I chose to do. I would merely send my clone to sit in a pub with a lot of witnesses while I went out and robbed the local NatWest, and I could never be done for it. And even if I was, I could send my clone to prison instead of me. This seems to me to present an insuperable barrier to the maintenance of law and order in this country, and therefore both I and my clone here would beg you to oppose this motion.
Thank you very much. Steve Pundon. Mr. Fanshawe, could you really tolerate a world when there were two of you?
It'd be absolutely marvellous if the only people who ran the world were the people here on the panel, together with the willing help of the beautiful audience that we have in front of us.
That's, yes, thank you. Moving on, Mr. Sinclair, what have you got against cloning? Two of you would be great, wouldn't it? Double the ball patch?
I'm opposed to cloning because I'm already schizophrenic, so I would be hopelessly confused.
Can I point out, Mr. Chairman, it would be doubly confusing because were his schizophrenia to double, he would become quadraphrenic, which means he would sing really not very good songs all the time.
You might not sing very good songs all the time, but you'd have fantastic speakers.
Very confusing. I can see this vote is going to go right down to the wire, so let's see what the House has to say. Those who agree with Michael, this House would like to clone itself, say aye.
Aye.
And those like Steve who'd like to say single, say nay.
Nay.
A huge victory there for Steve Punt and Pete Sinclair. That's the end of the debating for tonight. It just remains me to say thank you to our speakers. This week's debating dunces are Simon Fancher and Michael White. But this week's cerebral champs are Steve Punt and Pete Sinclair. And finally, it's fair to say that my guest's powers of oratory have been borne out by the words of comedian Steve Martin, who once said, "Some people have a way with words, while others not have way." Goodbye.
The Motion Show was chaired by Dr. Phil Hammond. The speakers were Simon Fanshawe, Steve Punt, Pete Sinclair and Michael White. It was devised by Bill Dare, and the producer was Helen Williams.